authors, are you looking for a new way to get your book in the hands of new audience of targeted buyers? Then a virtual book tour is for you. Right now, virtual book tours is an excellent opportunity for you to introduce your book and who you are as an author. Launching your book is very important. A virtual book tour will connect you with readers. We at WNL, we specialize in book tours, book blasts, radio tours, cover reveals, and Facebook chat. Promoting and marketing your book is what we do. Online publicity, the exposure and the publicity is what you need. Let us help you reach new readers and a new audience. We take care of everything so you don't have to. We set up the tour for you. We connect you with bloggers to advertise your book by way of interviews, guest posts, and reviews. If you are an author of a newly published book, have an upcoming release, or just want to give a previously published book new life, a virtual book tour is your answer. Check our tours out at www.wnlbooktours.com. Visit me on Facebook. I am the owner, Paulette Harper.
As an author, you understand the devastation of someone plagiarizing your work. But what if someone stole your identity? Protect yourself and your family with identity theft protection. Services include credit monitoring, credit reports and scores from all three credit bureaus, social security number, emails, credit cards, bank account monitoring, and social media monitoring from Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. For more information, call 248-525-7680.
Omar, can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you.
Okay, wonderful. And how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing beautiful.
Good, good, good. And thank you for the opportunity to come on to the podcast to share your story. So I thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Okay, so I know we only have an hour, and our hour do go fast. So we're going to try our best to kind of get through your story. If not, we'll just have to have a part two, okay? So I want you to take your time and just kind of just, you know, feel comfortable. You know, you're in a safe space sharing your story, you know, helping others to understand the dynamics of what it feels like to be incarcerated for 35 years. So as we begin, I would like to ask you, where were you born?
I was born in Ethiopia. Eritrea.
Okay.
And I came.
You there?
I was born in Ethiopia, Eritrea. I came over here in 1962. I was a little boy.
Okay, 1962. And what was life like as a child growing up?
Well, it was good because my father switched us from being a Jew into Islam. And we came into Islam. I became a Muslim back then. When he listened to Malcolm X two times, he switched us over.
Okay, alhamdulillah. And since you were raised and born in Ethiopia, when did you come to America?
When did I come to America?
Uh-huh.
I came to America
How
in 1960. Oh, I was about 6 or 7 years old.
Okay, 6 or 7, okay. And did you go to college? Or your educational background?
I didn't spend no more than about almost a year in college for auto mechanic at Cal State College.
Okay, wonderful. Well, that's good. And what was your professional life before being incarcerated?
I have a lot of different trades under my belt, but I became in my own business. I started my own business. I was security in the Crenshaw area, from Slauson and Crenshaw to Adams and Crenshaw to Lamerck and La Brea. I handled all the security in that area. And later on, I became a professional bodyguard. And I started bodyguarding different celebrities like Muhammad Ali, Lou Roth, Teddy Pendergrass, Nita Baker when she was Chapter 8. I started bodyguarding these different celebrities.
Wow, that's wonderful. And how many years were you the professional bodyguard?
It was about a year, a little over a year. because I got Muhammad Ali at the tail end. When he got rid of Mr. T, then I came on. And I was only had him about 3 months, and that was it.
Okay. And you mind sharing what happened that caused you to become incarcerated?
Well, me and Muhammad Ali, we left the Muhammad to Chicago. After we left Chicago, the meeting with him and another guy named Mr. Grayson. Mr. Grayson owned these machines that you could put poison water or dirty water on one side and go on the other side and bring it out and drink it. And they asked the two of the machines to go to Iran 2 days before the Shah got killed. So he called me and wanted me to be his bodyguard, the security of his business, bodyguard. And I said, why me? Who you pick me? He said, we looked in the yellow page and we seen nobody fit the description but you. And I said, hell, I'm there a lot. I said, that's good. and so what happened is I dropped Muhammad Ali off, and that was May 1982, 2027. The day was 2027, 1982. And when I dropped him off, I came back to pick my wife up when I was married at that time. And I came down on Jefferson and Weston. Two guys tried to rob me. And when they tried to rob me.
Oh, wow.
Okay, you know, I apologize for that, but your phone kind of broke up after you said they robbed you. What happened?
Yeah, they tried to rob me. And when they tried to take my car, what happened is I went on reach for his waistband, and when he reached for his waistband and said the word, let's kill this so-and-so and take it, then my reaction is, you know, immediately, as soon as my wife say they got a gun, boom. I shot.
Okay, so you shot on self-defense, and both
right.
of them. Oh, wow.
Shot both
okay.
of them.
Okay, and your wife was
one died.
And your wife was in
one
a car.
Died, one died. Huh?
No. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead. One died.
And one lived.
Okay. And how was your wife? Was your wife okay? Did she get harmed?
Yeah. Yeah, no, she didn't get harmed. She's from Panama. She didn't, you know, her English wasn't that good. But when she seen the dude reaching for the waistband, she understood that. She saved my life, you know.
Yes, sir. And how many years were you married?
Oh, I was only married a year to her before we got, this case happened.
Okay, so you was kind of just still on honeymoon stage.
Right.
Okay, and I remember you mentioned that you purchased a home, 2 weeks before this year happened?
Before I caught the case, I purchased a home on 108th and Crenshaw, and I never had a chance to stay in it. I had to turn everything over to my son's mother and her mother, and them. They took it, and they paid for it and gave it to my son's mother, but she turned around and sold it later on.
Okay. And then you mentioned after the incident took place and you protecting yourself and your wife, you end up turning yourself in?
Yes, I turned myself in the next day because they didn't come after me that day. They told the media and they told the people, they said, oh, when a lady followed me and got my license plate, they told her, oh, we already know who he is. He ain't going nowhere. He got a legit business down the street. He ain't going nowhere. And the next day when I turned myself in, you know, because the media came to my house, my office, and see me when the media came to me and talked to me, and they sit there and explain the situation, and they said, well, is it all right if we let the police know we're here with you? I said, yes, you can let them know. They said, well, you ain't got no gun on you. I said, no, I ain't got no gun on me. And so when they let them know, when they came, they talked to me, and they took me in.
Okay, and did you have to go through trial and everything? How did that process go?
Yes, that was a trip. I hired one lawyer named Michael Lyons. I lost $10,000, and he wasn't no good. I got rid of him. Then I hired this other lawyer with Joe Tannenbaum, and next thing you know, I gave him $10,000. And, you know, it seemed like he wanted more when it got close to the end. and I didn't have it to give it to him, so it seemed like he started going downhill with it, you know. And so I messed around, and I told him, I said, man, I'm supposed to be in the Olympics in 1984. And he said, yeah. I said, yeah, I'm running the 26-mile marathon. I already got my sponsors and everything. And he said, oh, we're going to talk to the judge about it. But the judge told me, you know, you should have stayed in Chicago. We don't have no self-defense in the state of California. And I said, what? He said, you tell me I can't defend myself? We don't have no self-defense. And when he said, we don't have no self-defense in the state of California, they messed around and they sent me away. For 15 of life and 10 years running bow-legged.
Wow. So, okay, so you have 15 years of life because of no self-defense law in the state of California.
Right.
And, you know, as of today, I think they still don't have a law. They still don't have a law because
right.
I'm a chaplain in the woman prison. And there's another lady who's in there for self-defense as well. Okay. And when you mentioned about Olympics, can you elaborate about that?
You got to realize we black. You know what I'm saying? And you're young. And then you got a gun on you. So, you know, they don't have no self-defense for us. You know?
Okay. And you mentioned about something. You was on your way to go to the Olympics?
Yeah. I was on my way to go to the Olympics. I had sponsors. They liked the way I ran, and they seen how fast I ran. And they asked me, you know, I had people sign me up and got me in there and said, you know, you run fast. How would you like to be an Olympic? I say, yeah. And so, and I told them, I'm going to represent my country. I can't represent America. I have to represent where I was born. So, and he said, okay, you know.
Wow.
So,
interesting. And so your whole world turns upside down after that, huh?
Yeah, it shattered my dream. My whole, it was like I was in an illusion. I was dreaming. I thought I was dreaming or something, you know. I said, wow, you know. Well, I'm lose all this. I'm going to lose my home, lose my business, lose everything I'm striving for, you know. And everything just went upside down.
Yes, well, so sorry to hear that. So I'm going to take a short commercial before I ask you the question about how was it being incarcerated, okay? So stay tuned.
Okay.
I'll be right back, okay? Yeah. Welcome back to Real Talk, Real People, Real Conversation with Charmaine. Thank you for those who's listening, staying tuned. Again, today this is an open mic discussion where you can call and talk to myself or the guest by dialing 646-668-5. Just hit the one on your phone, and I'll bring you into the audience where you can ask a question or a comment. Today's topic is about untold story of Omar Rashid Cage, incarcerated for 35 years, and I'm going to bring him back on so he can share his life being incarcerated. So one moment. So, Omar, are you there?
Yes, I'm still here.
All righty. Thank you for staying tuned. So, okay, so let's ask you. So the question I have for you is, what was life like being incarcerated?
Well, being in prison as young age as 27 years old, it was a hell of an experience, you know, and going through that trip, because I start off in a level 4, and where you have to really be alert, be already alert, already sharp. If you wasn't, you can walk out of there in a box, you know what I'm saying? Because you have a group. They have the little gang, the Crips or the Bloods, and then you had other cats, BGF, whatever. And then you had the Whites who had their gang, and the Mexican had their gang. So you have to be careful when you're in a safe situation like that. You got to know who to talk to, what to talk. You got to know not to borrow stuff from people that you can't pay back. You got to make sure if you borrow something, you got to give it back. Or if you don't, you're going to have problems. So I learned to just respect everybody and respect me. I learned to put my faith in God, and Allah protected me more than anything. I just, you know, I put my faith in Him and kept my head on my prayer rug praying, and asked for forgiveness for anything I'd done wrong. You know, that was my main focus.
That's the best way to be when you are in jail. So did you happen to stay in California? What prison did you go to?
Well, when I first started out in Old Folsom. That was a trip there, Old Folsom. And I left stay there like a couple of years, and they shipped me over to Tracy, what we call the Gladiator School, Tracy. I went to Tracy and stayed there 6.5 years, and I left there and went to Corcoran for about a year, and then they sent me down to Donovan, stayed down to Donovan in San Diego for about 3 years, and then they shipped me back down to Solano, stayed there long. Then I went over to Hatchapi, from Hatchapi to Solano. I'm in Avenal. I went over to Avenal and stayed there for a long time. That's when I started working the PIA. I started working the PIA laundry, messing with furniture, and that was a great experience there.
Okay, when you say PI furniture, that means you were building furniture, working with furniture?
Yeah, furniture like tables, conference tables. We built it for the government. We built it for the courthouse. We built it for CHP and a lot of more places, and the schools, some schools. And some colleges, we built clocks for them and different colors. And you have to, you know, main thing I was in, when they put them together, they come in the room where I'm at, and I stain them and spray them. So, you know, either going to be light oak, cherry, mahogany, or birch. You know, and we did that furniture. That's how we did it.
Okay. So what I heard, you kind of did a lot of jumping around, and then you kind of was at a location for a long period of time. Was that the last place that you was at the place? That was the last place?
Yeah, last place, you know.
Okay. And so by you, you know, staying close to Allah and, you know, practicing your religion so you can keep yourself grounded, you also developed taking up some courses or whatever to help you as well, right?
Yes, I took, when it was in there, I took a course called Breaking Barrier, Hard Cry for Peace, the American program, which is Jim Brown. Jim Brown have a program called the Medicare program, and that's his group, dealing with yourself, emotions, and dealing with things that's troubling you. You know, so we deal with that. And then I went to the Buddhist class, meditation, because I like to meditate, and I went to the Buddhist class for meditation.
That's good. Meditation is really good. So I know you mentioned that you were sentenced for 15 years, but you end up doing 35 years. Can you share with the audience that type of experience?
Yeah, when you sentenced for 15 years, 15 to life, they can take you up to 15, or you can take your life if you get in trouble or doing a lot of stuff, getting there sticking people or having fights or conference. You know, you can go, you can be in there a long time. And when I got a 10-year sentence, that's 5.5 years. After the 5.5 years, you start on your life sentence. Then I start on my life sentence, so that 15.5 years. What it lined up to is I got a couple of 115s, you know. I had one fight in there, and a couple of 115s, you know, it might have been for, you know, can or sheet to try to make a clothesline or, you know, open premier marriage with staff, you know, with a woman in there, they go crazy with that. And so, but when you go to the board, they play the Super Bowl shuffle with you. They sit around and say, they ask you a question about your case, and if you don't have enough insight, that's enough reason to deny you 5 years. To them, that's enough reason. Or if you don't have enough remorse, that's enough reason to deny you another 5 years. You know what I'm saying? So when they look at that and they say, where you going to stay at, where you going to live at when you get out, what you going to do when you get out, and if you don't have that in line, that's another reason to deny you another few years or 5 years. At first, when they did it a couple of times, the court told them they can't deny us that loan no more, so they have to deny us 3 years. They can do 3 years, 3 years, 3 years. They can keep playing with you like that for the next 10, 20, 30, 40 years.
Wow. So if you didn't have enough remorse, they put another 5 years on top of your sentence. And then if you don't have any place to go, they give you another 5 years. That's how your experience was?
Yes. That's how your experience was. And when they ask me questions about the victim, and I explain them about the victim, and what do you feel? If their family was sitting here, I apologize. I'm sorry it happened. And, you know, I was trying to defend my life, but I'm sorry it happened. And you explain to them, they don't like that. They want you to have a lot more remorse. So when they ask you something, I say, well, my mother just passed, and my mind is still focused on that. And when you start shedding tears and stuff, they say, well, you don't have enough remorse. You have more remorse for your mother than you do the victim that tried to kill you, and you killed him. And,
wow.
You know, I say, this man was trying to take my life. And you telling me I should have more remorse for him? I have remorse for him. I apologize. I wish you could do it all over again. I just jumped in my car and ran away. Wouldn't have never stopped there if I know this was going to happen. You know, they shattered my dream. You know, I lost a lot in life, you know.
Yes, yes. Well, I'm sorry to hear about your mother passed away. You also mentioned that you lost your father as well while you were incarcerated.
Yes, I lost my father. Before my mother passed, I lost my father, you know. And he was sent back home to Ethiopia. My mother is Haitian and Cherokee in India, so they buried her here, you know.
And you know, I'm not really familiar how the law is, but when your mother or father passed away, do they allow you to at least go visit the grave site or anything?
That's not the question. No, not for no lifer who have a murder. No, you're not. They're not letting you leave to go to no funeral and come back. My niece told them, said, we'll pay for the officer to escort him to the funeral and escort him back. We'll pay. And they wouldn't do it. They said, nah, uh-uh. They said, well, can we bring the body up there to them? No. They don't care.
Okay. Sorry to hear that. Mm-hmm. So anything else you would like to share with the audience about the experience in there? Who might be dealing with a loved one?
Spirits in there, if you got a wife or if you got children, their main objective is to try to divide you from your family. They claim they try to keep you together by moving you closer to your house, closer to your family, but they push you so far away, your family, body can come get you. Man, I was down for, from 1982 all the way into 97. That's the first time I seen my mother after all that time. It took that many years for me to see my mother. You get visits, but they get visits like they used to be every day. They changed all of that. Now it's like Saturday and Sunday. You only get a visit on Saturday and Sunday now.
Okay, so only on the weekend. And when you mentioned that they divide the family, does that mean that it was distance from you and your family at that time, where they really couldn't see you much, or were they able to see you every week?
No, they couldn't see me much. It was too far from them to come.
How far?
From where? From L.A. all the way to Folsom Prison? That's a long ways from L.A. to Folsom Prison. You're not driving no regular bus up there.
Is that like a 5-hour drive? I'm not familiar with the area.
Yeah,
how long is that?
Hours. It's
5 hours
like
drive.
Almost close to Sacramento, so that's almost 5 to 6 hours drive.
Wow. And how long is the visit? An hour, or how long did they have to see you?
Now, at that time, business was going like from 8 o'clock in the morning to 8 o'clock at night. They wasn't sweating you. Now what they do, you're only gonna be in there a few hours, especially if it's overcrowded, they're gonna terminate your visit and put somebody else in that spot.
Oh really? Oh wow. So it was almost 12 hours back then, and so now they cut it down to only 2 hours now.
Oh yeah. Yeah. See, you used to get family visits. Mm-hmm. You get family visits with your family, and you might get that like every 3 to 4 months, and you go in on a Friday, and you come out on a Sunday, you get a couple of days, but even then, they done took that from the lifers, and then they slowly was trying to give it back when I left, but they took that from the lifers, and only person get the family visit is those who don't have no murder case, those who are in there for...
Okay. And so since you said the last time you seen your mom before she passed away, did you have any other family members that came out to visit you?
No. My sister, she never came. And my next to my older sister, she died when I came out. She wanted to come, but she was too ill because she had bad kidneys. And she couldn't come. Which I got out. When I got out, I seen her. It was a blessing to get out and see her and been with her for a minute before she went into a coma. And they called me and asked me, my nieces and them asked me to come up to the hospital. So when I came to the hospital, I called her Don in her ear. When I called her Don in her ear, the brother told me, her eyes is open. And you see her eyes open. And then I turned around and looked at her. I said, I'm here. And she looked at me and smiled. And then her eyes closed back.
Sorry to hear that.
After that, I just, I left and they told me, about 2 days after I left, they told me she passed away.
She passed away. Oh, sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
So how many siblings did you have?
Well, I remember because my mother, they always were split up when my mother and father divorced. He took some with him, and she took some with her. So, I had 7 brothers and 8 sisters, and most of them was dead. And the ones that are still alive, when I got out, only one is alive I know of now is one of my sisters, and I don't know where she at. I ain't seen her since I've been home. I ain't seen my niece since I've been home.
Wow. Okay. So it's been 4 years since you've been home now?
Yes, 4 years since I've been home. Yes.
Okay. And what are some of the ways that you have seen coming back out, compared to going in when you're 27 years? I mean, is there a big difference in society and the support and the love and everything?
Wow. It was like dropping me off in a foreign country. You know, it's like between night and day. I said, good Lord, where's everything at? I didn't know. I went downtown one time and got kind of scared and got lost. Where the hell am I? I'm trying to get to Broadway or somewhere. I couldn't find nothing. I had to make a phone call because it kind of scared me a little bit because like I'm lost. I used to know where everything at down there. I don't know where nothing at down there no more. Buildings and chains. I see more on the street than I have a blink of eye at. Yes, I've never seen this before. I seen a lady get on the bus with a baby in her hand, and I cried because it hurted me. It touched my heart real bad to see a homeless women on the street and with their babies and stuff. Man, that ripped through my heart. I said, oh, my God, where in the hell am I? This is supposed to be America, the land of the free, the land of the milk and honey. Where's it at? No, you know, when I come out here and I see this, I mean, I have to struggle hard. Like the lady told me when I came out, when you get out running. She didn't get out running. She told me, she said, you was in business, you need to get out running, start you another business. So I had to get out doing something quick, because other than that, I'd be sleeping out there on the street with the homeless. I wouldn't have no place to go. Nobody offered me anything. Nobody came to me and said, let me give you this, let me give you that. When I went to the mosque, only way I got help, when I went to the mosque, brothers came up to me and said, Brother Umar, I ain't seen you in a long time, brother. Oh, man, we're glad to see you home. Papa Shah walked up to me and said, man, how much money you got in your pocket? I said, man, I got the money they gave me when I got off the bus, the $200 and the little money I had. He said, see me when you get up. When Juma was over with, man, the brother put $500 in my hand, just like that. I said, wow, okay, thank you. You know, when I came back the next time, he did it again. You know what I'm saying? So it's something to get me on my feet to do something, you know. And I looked at that and I said, well, I got people who still love me, who still respect me in the mosque. I never was a gangbanger in my life. I never ran with the streets. I never drank or smoked or got high in my life. So I didn't have no friends like that to run to. Only thing I can run is back to the mosque. That's all I can do. Go to the mosque. Where the Muslims at? And they all respected me, loved me, grabbed me, hugged me, glad to see me home. When I got home, Islah gave me a job working over there, volunteer at first. And now we get paid, you know. They gave me a job working there. You know, Captain Shaheed said, hey, man, meet you down here. I do security for them. I drive the trucks for the food bank on Thursday, like I did today, drop the food, I'll come back. They helped. They was there for me. And it's like, you know, I done owe my life to these brothers and sisters out there who cared about me, loved me, and care and want to see me back. A lot of us, when we in prison, we get a little rusty up under the arm, up under the neck, and some of us have a tense and snap at certain things. But me, I kept a law up front, and I try to deal with things in a humble way. Every now and then, my feathers get ruffled, but I try to deal with things in a humble way. Only way I know, if you depend on Allah and put your faith in him, he will solve all problems. The same way when I was in prison with some ignorant people, envy and jealousy of me for the things I done. When they had the prison in Tracy locked down because the blacks stole the mail from the Mexicans and the white, they came and got me out the cell. And I asked them, why'd you come get me? You got the Muslim representative down there, the other, why'd you get me? They said, because we've been watching your movement. We like the way you approach. I went to the gym and talked to some of the people down there, and them blacks gave me all that mail back. And some whites gave me the mail back. It was envelopes. It was just envelopes with stamps on it. They can write their people. And they were stealing. So they gave it back, and I gave it back to the people. And they said, that's why we came and got you. And, you know.
Uh-huh, go ahead.
So that's why he came and got you. I didn't even say that. So with that, keeping Allah up front, because I remember the Honorable Elijah Muhammad told us, if you be a good example and be a role model, your neighbor will watch you and see you, and they want to follow that. And they don't want to be frightened of you. If you got your neighbors frightened of you, that's a bad situation in the eyesight of Allah. So, you know, I try to keep my focus and kept my prayers and study my Quran and try to treat people how I want them to treat me.
Absolutely.
And that's And, you know, that's what I have to do. You know, when out now, it's about creating my business, trying to build me another business, trying to grow and try to do things. Not just the business just to fit me. I want it to fit the community. I want to help the community. I want to show my grandchildren this is what I can do when I got out of prison. I started my own business. I helped a guy to build a house right there on 7th Avenue in Slauson. They caught a fire. I helped him remodel that month. You know what I'm saying? He was beautiful, you know. But I got out and said, I need to work for me. And so this is what I'm trying to do, is trying to build my business up. And once I build it up, right now I'm working out of my van. And as soon as I get enough money built up, I can go open me a storefront. And I want to be able to sit down and write a book and tell people, youngsters, how when they get out of prison, or when they get out, what to do with themselves. You ain't got to go back to your gangbanger, to your homeboys, your friends, to the ignorant stuff you was doing. You can go down the right path, not the left path. If you go down the wrong path, you're going to go back in prison or the graveyard. You got to go down the right path.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I totally agree with you. And alhamdulillah, that's beautiful that when you got out, you went back to the masjid, you know, and you found the brothers there to embrace you and to give you the love and the support that you need to help you so you don't return back into the place where you were at for 35 years. And I know so many brothers who come out and don't have a sense of direction, don't know where to go. But as long as you kept Allah in front of you and you kept your prayers and obviously your demonstration of you putting Allah first, they watched you while you was in prison. And when there was trouble, when trouble came, it was your character, your humbleness about you that you were chosen to be able to still to be that security guard to go get the mail from the prisoners who were taking the mail from the other people, you know. So Allah definitely will use you in so many ways that you have no idea, you know. And again, I'm so grateful to hear your story and hear how you turn yourself around and starting your own business, you know, trying to be that entrepreneur and do for self and helping other brothers. I know you mentioned that you also, you know, talk to other brothers. The probationer officer contacts you and you and a couple of brothers to go talk to other brothers who just getting out and kind of guide them in the right direction. Can you share a little bit about that?
You know, we have people that get out of prison, really don't have no hopes and don't know what to do. If you're in prison, you're studying, you're working in the laundry, or you're working in the furniture factory. Some people work the metal fab. And all these bookbinders, these different trades. I never worked on a job. I didn't study the job where I was working on. And when I studied, I watched what they do, and I said, you know what? I can do this myself. I put that in the back of my head. So if ever any situation ever come up, if I have to use that, somebody come to me and say, hey, you know how to do the kitchen cabinets? Yes. Bathroom cabinets? Yes. I can do it. Tear down the building of them. So you got to keep that trade and have that. So when you get out, you be a creative. You can create your own. You can do for yourself. That's why now if I get a house, if something go wrong in the house, I don't have to call nobody to fix something in the house. I can do it myself. Something go wrong with the plumbing, I can do it myself. Something go wrong with the carpenter or drywall, I can do it myself. I don't need to call nobody. I do it myself. And then you got a phone to help you if you're not sure of something, the phone will help you to go there and show you how to do that. Go on YouTube. They bring it up. You know what I'm saying? People paying all these people this money for houses. I see people walk around here. I see houses now. There's so much run over, tore up. It ain't funny. And I'm looking at it. I said, man, come on. That was my house. That house would look way better than that, you know. But that's where it is, you know. But the being out, when I tell the cats when you get out, Everybody's not going to look at you the same. People going to look at you, oh, you've been to prison. People front at you, and some people say, wow, you've been to prison? You tell them your story, say, what? Is that right? And some people respect that. 35 and a half years behind walls, and they supposed to been letting me out, but they wanted to play the Super Bowl shuffle with me. When they feel like they want to let me out, they'll let me out. And that's not right. That's not right to nobody in prison. I wouldn't put that on my worst enemy. But that's the way they do it. That's the way they do it. Quran said, by the token of time, surely man is at loss, except those who believe and do good, exalt one another to truth and patience. And that's what I try to do, exalt one another to truth and patience, that understand. You got to have patience when you come out here. That's why I deal with loving work. I make persons, wallets, and persons. You got to have patience to deal with loving. If you ain't got no patience, leave it alone. Leave it alone. Because it'll tag you down. But you got to have patience to sit there. I was in prison. I was making purses. I had free staff, the accounting office, CO, come to me and say, hey, can you make a purse for me? I need one for my wife. I need a way for my daughter. I need a wallet. I need a, can you do my belt, my officer's belt? Can you redo it? You got to have patience to sit there 5 to 6, 7 hours. Go to work. Come back. Sit there 5, 6, 7 hours, hammering on leather, making leather, lacing it up. You got to have patience. That would give me the patient understanding to deal with this type of world out here. Because this type of world, it make you like, it feel like a jungle sometimes. It make you wonder why I keep from going under. Yeah, by Branch Master
that is, that
Flash,
is true.
Let me say that. You know what I'm saying? And then I feel like a jungle. And I say, wow, what's going on out here? These kids driving crazy out here, like they're about to lose their mind, killing each other, shooting guys, shooting, looking at you, walking around like they're tough. And I said, wow. I walked up on a cat one day and asked him, give me a direction to go somewhere. He had his gun sitting right on his shoulder. I said, brother, peace. I said, I'm a Muslim. I come at peace, brother. I ain't here to fight with you. I'm here to fight. I ain't here to fight against you. I'm here to fight with you. I ain't come with no foolishness. So he said, oh, what can I do for you, brother? I said, brother, I'm trying to get downtown to this place. How can I get there? He looked at that. He said, you got a phone? He said, yeah. Let me see your phone. He did in GPS. He said, that's how you get there, brother. Thank you. I said, brother, assalamu alaikum, brother. Peace be unto you. And I walked away. I'm looking
well,
at
that's good. You know what? By listening, I hear you. But you know what? By listening to your story, by you being in jail, Allah has really prepared you to be patient. So when you came out in the world, you had to have patience for yourself, and not even that, for your brothers that you are helping and trying to mentor and allowing them to, or teaching them of the skill sets that they have developed while they were in jail, to use them skills and apply it out in the world so they can be able to be in control of their life so they can move forward. And that's what I'm hearing from you. Would you agree?
Yes.
So that's,
you know, when you like this, it's a trip. You know, I done seen people commit suicide in prison. I done seen people kill themselves, you know, because they couldn't take that time. I know one guy, our Arab dude, he's supposed to be a Muslim. He walked up to me and told me, At first I had 27 years in that time. He said, what? 27 years? Oh, man. I went up there and killed myself. You didn't think about doing that? I said, man, get out of my face. Get out of my face, man. You don't even sound like a Muslim talking like that. I said, I got faith in Allah. Allah protects me. When Allah want me, he going to get me. When Allah want me to go out that door, I'm going out that door. And ain't nobody can do nothing about it. And Allah blessed me to go out that door without nobody doing anything about it. One of the board members, the DA down there, she wanted to say, oh, no, I don't think he did enough time. The DA told the dude was at the board, told her, shut up, turn that TV off. I don't want to hear what she's talking about. This man here, he should have had a self-defense. I don't even know why he's sitting here in front of me. I'm finna let him out of here. They let me out of there through one stage after that. When I couldn't go in front of them, I went to the next stage with the governor, and they say, let me out. Some people get denied when they go to the board. You go to the board, they give you a date, and then you got to wait for the governor or the 12 board panels. Some people deny you, and you have to wait all over again, go through all the changes all over again. You have to go through that all over again. Okay. That's so nerve-wracking. I see why some people kill themselves or hurt themselves, because it hurts. You build your family up, let them know, and they deny you.
Well, alhamdulillah, I'm glad to finally meet you. You know, I didn't know you when you went in, but it was a pleasure of meeting you while you're out, you know, and I happened to meet you on Facebook, and then we end up meeting at an Eid celebration, and we started talking, and your story just inspired me where I said, you know what, Allah kept pulling on my heart to say, you know what, have him on a podcast and talk. And like I told you, whenever you're ready, Masjid al-Sharif has a door open for you if you would like to open up a class and minister to the brothers who are lost, who doesn't have that self-esteem, who's lacking confidence and might need some, you know, guidance on how to fill out an application or guidance and try to do budgeting and how to budget their money so they can become entrepreneurs. I'm willing to help you just to let you know that I have background in finance and accounting, and so I understand a little bit being a Muslim chaplain as well in a woman prison. So we only have about 5 minutes left, and I just want to just give you an opportunity of closing out. If there's anything, or people can reach you if they want to, you know, help you or anything, is there any closing remarks that you would like to share with the listeners or whoever's struggling with a family member who's lost, confused? What kind of advice would you actually give them to help to support the person, to support their loved one who might have been incarcerated for many years, you know, maybe not long as 35, but you could understand the mindset and dynamics of what a person goes through when they're coming out. So could you just give a closing remark about that and
yes.
then how people can find you if you want to?
With that, you need to really put your faith in God, first and foremost. You understand? You got to walk through the shadow of death and don't fear no evil. I put my faith in God. You put your faith in God, you can be successful out here on the street. You got a family member like that, just get out of prison, put your faith in God and pray. And pray with them all the time. Be there for them. Don't turn your back on them. Some of you can't get out of prison. Some people get out of prison, they're crazy. People still going in the shower, washing their underwear or washing their socks out in the shower. And that shows you that a person who's got a problem, he's prison orientated. So you need to help him and be there for him. We need women to understand us and understand our situation, be there for us. Don't come there trying to control us. When you try to control us, you make the brother go buck wild and act crazy. You know what I'm saying? You got to be there for us. You got to have patience, understanding the dealing with a person like this. If you don't have patience, understanding dealing with a person like this, you need to get away from it. You know what I'm saying? It takes time, and people can get in touch with me calling me through 323-636-4528. Anything can help me, can give me guidance, can help me financially wise, to build my business up so I can show other people and help them to build business. That's my main objective, showing people to get out to build a business, to be able to buy me some real estate, be able to buy me some property, and show cats this is what I do, this is how you can do it. I'm trying to show people. But I'm, like I say, I'm struggling trying to get back that way because I had to start from the bottom of the totem pole when I went in. When I went in, I had $300,000 in the bank. When I come out, the $300,000 is gone. I don't know where it's at. You know, so.
Go ahead.
It's bad.
I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, you can contact me by that number, 323-28, ask for Umar. Anything you want to donate to me, help me, contact me, and I'll tell you how to do it.
Okay, Umar, can you repeat that number? Because you said it fast for me.
That's 323-636-4528.
You said 636-4528?
Yeah, 636.
Okay.
Because you got 323 is the area code, and 636,
yes.
4520.
Yes. Well, thank you so much, Umar, again, for sharing your story. And, you know, as long as you keep putting Allah first in everything you do, you will get back everything that you have lost. You know, there are so many stories in the Quran and the Bible, parable stories of the test that Allah will test us to make sure that we're strong for the blessings that he has for us. So just keep moving forward. Don't doubt yourself. Know that Allah is with you and you have so many help around you. And like I said, if I can help you in any way moving forward, helping the community, you know I'm here for you. And so, again, I just want to just thank you for the opportunity, again, to share your story and be on my podcast. So I'm going to wrap it up with closing remarks. And you know how to get in touch with me if you need me, okay? All righty. All right, I'm going to put you back in the audience. So I'm late, okay? Well, thank you guys for listening. It was, again, I want to thank Umar for being a guest on my show and sharing his story, his knowledge, and his wisdom. And, you know, he actually inspired me just listening to his story and the struggles that he had to go through and so many other men, black, white, all different race, the struggles of what it is to have your life stripped from you and then you have to come back in society and start all over again. And me being a chaplain now at the women prison and hearing the stories and how they just, you know, walked away from their family, their children, I know it has to be hard on them. So as a motivated speaker, a spiritual consultant, I am an author, a chaplain for a woman prison. This podcast every week has allowed me to be able to mentor and minister to the women in prison as well as the general population to inspire me to go the extra mile to touch more hearts and souls that need healing with deep conversation that's relevant with life issues to uplift us, to motivate us, to empower us, to have stimulated conversations, to bring awareness of what things that we're dealing with in life so we can help each other to live in our authentic self so we can stand in our truth and live a peaceful and happy life. You know, we all need each other. We can't do it alone. And if you want to learn more about me, you can visit my website at CharmaineHolland.com. It has been a pleasure. I always look forward into listening and seeing you guys on Thursday. And I want to say stay safe and stay in the light. God bless you. Have a wonderful night.